I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg of Star K, and I'd like to welcome you to Star K's ongoing teleconference for Vadim, Rabbanim, and Mashkichim, dealing with kashrus issues from the perspective of the local Vad. This is a monthly conference, and if you'd like to be put on a dedicated list to be apprised of future dates, send an email to telekosher, T-E-L-E, kosher at star-k.org, and we'd be happy to put you on the list and keep you apprised. Our producer is Reb Zev Steen, who's running the show as well as recording it. The previous recordings of our last two conferences with Rabbi Zusha Blech and Rabbi Luban of the OU are available on our website at star-k.org. You go there and you click on programs and you can listen to the previous conferences. Tonight's speaker is Rav Moshe Heineman Shlita. Rav Heineman needs no introduction, certainly not from me. We list him on our PR as the rabbinic administrator for Star K, but really Rav Heineman is the Star K, and everything that happens here happens because of Rav Heineman. Our intent is to have Rav Heineman speak on tonight's topic, which is preparing for Pesach, and then we'll take questions from the audience, which we want. We want to get people involved. We want to offer people to ask Rav Heineman questions and hear from him. If you have a question, please hit 1-1 on your keypad at any time, even when Rav Heineman is speaking, and then when we recognize you later, you'll hear that the computer will ask you to speak. If a volume is a problem, it's not loud enough, press *0 repeatedly, and that should take care of that. Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Heineman.
Good evening, everyone, or good morning, wherever you are in the world. This year, Erev Pesach is going to fall on Shabbos. That means Pesach starts on Motzei Shabbos. So there are some things that are different because Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos. One thing is that Bedikas Chametz, instead of being the night before Pesach, which would be Friday night, is going to be on Thursday night. The brach is said like every time when you're Bedik Chametz. And after the Bedika, so then you're Mavatl the Chametz in the normal way. That I haven't seen and I haven't destroyed should be bottle. On Friday, it is burnt at the time you usually burn chametz, that is within 5 shas manias of the day. And as long as the chametz is still would be permitted on a Erev Pesach, that's when you have to burn it, in order to not get confused with other years. Actually, in the Gemara, it says that you should not, v'sarfa b'tchilas sheish, that you're at the beginning of the 6th hour, you're supposed to burn it. However, today we don't do that anymore, because once it became asur, no, at the beginning of the 6th hour, you can't be mevatlet anymore. And since after the sheifa, we're mevatlet, and you don't want to mevatlet before the sheifa in order to fulfill the mitzvah of sheifa with your own chametz that you own. So therefore, the bittul chametz, which is traditionally said after the burning of the chametz, has to be said still before the chametz has burned, or within the 5 hours of the day, starting from the morning. Of course, these are shasmanias. So this time of the year, shasmanias are about a year, are about an hour each, and they start from the time that the day begins. This year, different from all other years in the United States, the time to burn the chametz is going to be an hour later because we're already on daylight savings time. But this year, there's no kol chamir that is said, because if you would say that all the chametz which I own should be insignificant and should be like the dust of the earth, and then you go and eat it on Friday night and you eat it on Shabbos morning, well, that's, at this point, you'll be mevatel the bittel. You're saying that even though it says it's insignificant, I went and ate that insignificant chametz, so you're giving it some chashivas. So you're not mevatel at that time, even though normally we do it right after we burn it. and in the morning after the second Suda. So then in the morning, then we must be Mavatlit before the fifth hour of the day, as I mentioned before. Now, Bechayrim that normally fast on Erev Pesach, this year they fast on Thursday. They can't fast on Shabbos because it's a Shabbos, which would be the normal day to fast because it's Erev Pesach. And once you push it off from Shabbos, we don't do it on Friday, that when a person comes into Shabbos, you should not feel hungry because it wouldn't be considered a proper Anik Shabbos. So we push off the fast to Thursday. Now, most people have the Siyum. When should you make the Siyum? Because maybe you should make the Siyum on Shabbos, because that's really the day to fast. Now, we don't fast because you know, not to fast on Shabbos, but a Siyum you can make on Shabbos. But the meaning is to make the Siyum on Thursday anyway, which is the time that if we would fast, it would be on that Thursday. Now, if it's difficult to fast on Thursday, because at the end of the Thursday, we have to be Bidik the Chametz on Thursday night, and it shouldn't really eat before B'dikas Chametz. So in such a case, if someone did fast, or he was a poor did fast, he's allowed to eat he's allowed to eat some things before the B'dikas Chametz, as long as it's not, he doesn't sit down to eat a Kriyas Suda. Now, whatever you're allowed to eat out of the Sukkah on Sukkahs, a man is allowed to eat out of the Sukkah on Sukkahs, is not considered Kriyas Suda. So therefore, you can eat some fruit or other things like that, and you start the B'dikas Chametz. Because B'dikas Chametz, if it's done thoroughly, could take quite some time. Now, on Shabbos, it says in Shulchan Aruch that you should not cook things which stick onto the pots, because you're allowed to eat chametz on Friday night, you're allowed to eat chametz on Shabbos morning. As a matter of fact, not only are you allowed to eat chametz, but what else are you going to eat on Shabbos morning? Most people have the custom that they don't eat matzah already from Rosh Chodesh. Some people already stop eating matzah at Purim time. According to the strict halacha, it is only forbidden on Erev Pesach starting from the morning. So Friday night, according to the strict halacha, you could still eat matzah. But on Shabbos morning, you're not allowed to eat matzah. You're not allowed to eat it. So what are you going to eat in the morning? And according to our minhag, that we don't eat matzah ready for Rosh Chodesh, what are you going to do on Friday night? You need three sudas. So if matzah you can't eat, so you can eat chametz. But many people don't want to eat chametz because the house is ready for Pesach and you get chametz into the house. Well, you're allowed to eat egg matzah all the way until, according to the minhag of Ashkenazim, as long as you can eat chametz, you're allowed to eat egg matzah. Egg matzah is not really chametz. The Sfaradim eat it on Pesach. We don't eat it on Pesach. But that's what you should give to the children to eat on this Shabbos, because even if it's very hard to control the children, small children, they shouldn't get crumbs. So you can give them chametz. You're afraid who knows where they're going to end up in the house, which is spotlessly clean for Pesach. So you can give them egg matzah. As a matter of fact, if they're small enough, less than 6 years old, you can actually give them matzah, because the only those that have the mitzvah of eating matzah on the Seder night are the ones which can eat matzah during the day. But children that are less than 6 years old are not considered b'nei chinuch, so you're actually allowed to give them regular matzah. Anyway, the most practical thing is not to have the whole house pesedik already, all the meals that are served on Friday night are in pesedik parts. Everything is, there's nothing that has any chametz that should be served on Friday. And the only thing is, you'll have to make some rolls or maybe a bagel, fresh rolls, that they don't crumble so much. Once they get older, they make crumbs. And you eat them, all this food should be served on paper plates with disposable cutlery, plastic or whatever, or plastic plates. And and then you just throw all of it in the garbage, because whatever's on it is all kosher Pesach. The rolls you eat on a paper napkin, And after you finish eating the roll, you just fold up the napkin with any crumbs that may be in it and throw it in the toilet. And the then you really have got around the most difficult part of Erev Pesach Chalitz for Shabbos. Now, since even if a crumb would fall onto the tablecloth, it has a disposable plastic tablecloth on top. You roll it up, it's assumed that there is no chametz in it. Even if there is a chametz, it's definitely less than a kazayis. Maybe it's a crumb or two, but on Pesach, we don't say chatzi shir osman atari l'kavi bar yor abali matzei, so you're not worried about a crumb, and you can just throw that in the garbage. Now, the question is, can you use egg matzah? You have to eat egg matzah in the morning. Now, normally you make a mezonos on egg matzah, and for the Shabbos Sudas, you need bread which make hamotzi. Now, Moshe Feinstein says that you're allowed to make hamotzi and egg matzah because Sudas Shabbos is kavas, it has special chashivas, and therefore even the mezonos is considered like hamotzi. Well, you know, Rav Moshe Feinstein was the Pesach Adar, and there's no way that I can or would want to disagree with him, but I can say that it's not the minik, because according to him, whenever you make a kiddush, you wouldn't make a mezonos, because every mezonos is hamotzi on Shabbos. Definitely not the minik to do that. We made a mezonos on it, and therefore, I don't recommend using for adults. I do not recommend using the egg matzahs to make hamotzi on it. Even though it is true, if you eat a whole meal, you'd make hamotzi even on cake, and egg matzah included. But you got to eat two meals, one after the other, before the Zman Nisachil's Chametz. You can't eat two complete meals in such a short span of time. So therefore, the old custom is to eat regular Chametz. Be careful, make small rolls, and just enough to, there should be a kibbutz the size of an egg, our egg, in volume, and that's all that is necessary. All the rest could be kosher Pesach. After you've eaten the Chametz, if you want, you can wash out your mouth and eat the rest of the Pesach Digger meal. Anyway, all those utensils which you're using are going to be thrown in the garbage, so it's not really that important. You have to wash out your mouth. However, after the second Suda, then one should wash out your mouth, because now you've got to get prepared for Pesach and you shouldn't have any chametz in the mouth anymore. There is an interesting thing that in the Bar Hetev, in Siman Tov Mem Dal, I believe, Sukkot Beis, it says that the Shem Ben Yochai was Mekayim Shor Sudas with Torah. Because the Torah gives a person more satisfaction and more Onik Shabbos than a Sudas, so even Kayim with Torah. Now, the Mashal brings this. Now, it's not the minik to be Yotze B'Torah, because you can only be Yotze B'Torah if the Torah is Emes HaTorah, because someone schlugs up the Torah, so then the whole Shor HaSudas is up geschlagen. No Shor HaSudas. But you can't schlug up gefilte fish or something else like that, so therefore you're better off if you eat the regular Suda and not try to be Yotze B'Torah. But anyway, the Pesachim don't go along with that, and they say that you have to actually eat. Now, for Shor HaSudas, which is now going to be in the afternoon, it's questionable if you could divide the suda in the morning into two. In other words, you'd wash, eat half the suda, bench, then walk outside a little bit to make a hefsek, come back, wash again, and make hamotzi, and eat the rest of the suda. You have to eat again chametz, a fresh roll, because you need shleimim and shalim, and then you would... And then, as I said before, whatever chametz is left, you throw in the toilet and flush it down the toilet and whatever else, and then you bench again, all before the fifth hour, and then you mavatel the chametz. Now, there is a problem. If someone's going to bake challah themselves, that should make sure to take challah from these rolls or whatever they're making before Shabbos. Because you didn't do it before Shabbos, you get into a very big problem. Normally, in Chutz La'aretz, if you didn't take challah before Shabbos, you can eat it on Shabbos and leave over something for after Shabbos and take challah from it at that time. You hear you can't leave anything over till after Shabbos because it's Pesach. So what are you supposed to do? So some say give it to a guy. But some say you know how to give it to a guy, because you give it to a guy, you know how it will be taken, and it comes out, you have all my frère. So that's it's a big problem. So therefore, I want to make sure that chal should be taken before Shabbos. Now, what happens? A woman lit the Shabbos. The woman was ready to makabel Shabbos on herself, and now she realized that she forgot to take challah. So the Taz holds that it's a kabbal Shabbos betos. As long as it's still before the Shkia, because if she wouldn't remember that she didn't take the challah, she would never be makabel Shabbos. And she's actually allowed but the most important thing is not to forget. It's very important to make sure that it's done properly. There's one more thing before we get into the questions that I'd like to mention. That's about the oat matzahs. Now, you can get oat matzahs which are made, the Shem Matzahs Mitzvah, which are made Kosher Pesach. And I don't have any question that about the kashrus of these matzahs, that they're surely Kosher Pesach. And these matzahs are eaten usually by people who are allergic to wheat. Most people are allergic to the gluten in the wheat. And oat has very low gluten, if any gluten. Of all the five types of grain, wheat, barley, spelt, rye, and oats, the oats has the smallest amount of gluten. All the rest of them have gluten in them. And there are a lot of people who are allergic to the other four types, but not to oats. So oats is their savior, that they don't feel sick on Pesach. Now, the problem with oats is that the oat kernels are, if by 90 days after they've been harvested, if you don't, there's an enzyme in the oats which turns the oats rancid, and you can't eat them anymore. So in order to make sure that doesn't happen, either they steam the oats to kill the enzyme, or they put them in a heater which the hot air will kill the enzyme. Now, I'm sure they didn't put it into steam, because you can't put oats that you can use for matzahs. You put them in steam, but they probably put them into the hot air in order to kill this enzyme. Or they bake them before the 90 days. Now, that's unlikely they did that, because they're harvested in the summer, in the early summer, and at that time they don't know how many orders they're going to have and what they're going to have, if they're going to make them, if not going to make them. So they probably did heat them. Now, even though they heated them, the Kosher Pesach, but there's a very big question now if you could actually yotze the mitzvah of matzah with these matzahs. Because the Torah says, Ushmartem es ha-matzahs. And the Prima Gaon says that the only type of matzah that you could be yotze with is a matzah which could become chametz, but you were careful, Ushmartem es ha-matzahs, to watch it that it should not become chametz. But if it cannot become chametz, so then it's not good for matzah's mitzvah. It's kosher Pesach. It's like potatoes. You can't be yotze matzah with potatoes, but it can't become chametz. So this can't become chametz either. As a matter of fact, you take flour and you put it into an oven and heat up the flour, it will not be able to become chametz. So why doesn't everyone do that for the matzahs in order that you shouldn't have any shavuot chametz? Because you're not yotze mitzvah matzah with this, according to Prima Gaon. Now, the Mishnah Sodom says, but yeah, but you could be yotze. It just has to be a type of grain that could become chametz. It doesn't actually have to be that this flour over here has to become chametz, but oats have to be able to become chametz, which they could. But this is a questionable shaila, and you have to find out. So I'm not questioning whether the kosher Pesach or not. I'm not questioning whether we made the shame that's the mitzvah or not. I'm just questioning whether you could actually be yotze the mitzvah of matzah with these matzahs according to the by the Seder nights, according to the Prima Gaon, who is noted to think that you cannot be yotze. So this is something to take into consideration.
Rabbi Heinemann, we had information this year that the Lakewood Matzah Bakery made oat matzahs, and I spoke to them. They said they did not heat it. So though that they were careful not to, I think they produced it right after they harvested it.
Okay, that's good to know, because the matzahs that I'm familiar with are not made in America. I think they're made in England.
Right.
And as far as I know, they had this problem.
Right.
If they don't have the problem, it's very good. So that's one.
Right. The liquid matzahs don't have the problem, but they're not yoshin this year, they told me.
They're not yoshin.
Yeah, on the third day of Pesach they will be.
Okay, so it's good for the Seder on the third night.
Right.
Third night of Pesach. Okay, are there any questions?
We can take questions. If you do have a question on what Rabbi Heineman was speaking about, or on any other topic, really, just hit 1-1 on your keypad, and we'll recognize you over here, and we can take the question. While we're waiting for that, Rabbi Heineman, another interesting thing is the quinoa question. If Rabbi Heineman could address that issue, chometz, kidneys, or
okay.
Otherwise?
All right, look, let me tell you what I know about quinoa. Quinoa is a grain. I think it comes first grown in the Andes Mountains in South America, and it's like very small seeds. And the question was, is quinoa considered kidneys, or is it chametz? So someone over here from Baltimore was in Eretz Yisrael, and he asked Rabbi Blau from the Eda Charedis if you could use it for Pesach or not. So Rabbi Blau said, leave it here. I don't have any time to look at it today. Tomorrow I'll have an answer for you. So the next day, this person came back, and there was a bag which had the quinoa in it with a note on it saying that you could use it on Pesach. It's not chametz, and it's not kidneys. So we were mefarshim from that you could use it in the name of Rabbi Blau. And it seems that some people called up Rabbi Blau and asked him, is it true that you said this? And he says he doesn't know anything about this, and they should not say in his name that, no one has any right to say in his name that he said it was okay. Well, then this person who originally asked him, who had the note which it said it was okay, went back to Rabbi Blau and showed him the note. So Rabbi Blau said that this is his sister's handwriting, and evidently she discussed it with him because she wouldn't say anything without his okay. And really, he believes that it's not chametz or any kidneys, but he doesn't want to really get involved with this. It seems to be a hot potato, and he doesn't want to get involved. And they should not use his name. Okay, so now at this point we were a little bit stuck. So I decided, well, I'll make an experiment. So I took regular flour, and I took a certain amount of it, and I mixed it with a certain amount of water. And then I took a different type of flour, which they claimed to, I forgot the name of it already, which they claimed was the ancient Egyptian wheat.
Kamut. Kamut.
Kamut, yes, Kamut.
K-A-M-U-T. Right.
Right, so I took that flour, and the same amount and the same amount of water, and I put it in another dish. And then I took this quinoa flour, and I did the same thing with that. And I put them all, down in the in a room at room temperature, and waited 18 minutes and see what's going to happen. So if it's not chametz, so if it's one of the grains, you know, the question is quinoa a type of wheat, or is it a type of barley, or one of the other grains? If it will become chametz, so that's a sign that it is a grain. If not, it's not. Well, after 18 minutes, I checked them, and lo and behold, none of them had risen. They were all just the same dough like they were originally. Okay, so I let it stand for 3 days. And then the one which was regular flour had risen big air holes in it, and the kamut also had holes in it, not as big, but they also had holes. But the quinoa was pudding, mamish pudding, not a single airspace in it. It didn't rise at all. So later I found in the Tversh Yisrael, Masechtas Menachos, he says that a regular dough doesn't become chametz so fast in 18 minutes. It takes quite a lot of time. But it's a chashash chametz already by 18 minutes. so the I said, now, well, I don't, without Rabbi Blau, I can say on my own that it doesn't become a chometz. So the 3 days didn't become a chometz, it's not going to become a chometz after that. And the maybe it's kidneys. Well, kidneys really are only the things which the Goyim said is kidneys. We don't make up our own kidneys. Kidneys are things which have the same properties as flour, or they grow together with wheat. Either grow together with wheat, or they make food like wheat. So for the corn was accepted that it is kidneys. I'm not sure if they had corn in the times of the Goyim or not, but it's been accepted that it's kidneys. You can make all kinds of food with corn like you can with wheat. But if I would have been there in the times of the Goyim, I think and we had potatoes, I would have said potatoes is also kidneys. Because potatoes, you can make potato cakes, and you can make potato cookies, and you can make a lot of things out of potatoes. But since they didn't save, so we didn't make any new takanas that were not existing at that time. The quinoa doesn't grow with wheat. It doesn't grow in the same country. It doesn't grow in the same altitudes as wheat grows. We don't make new kidneys. So it's not kidneys. It's not chametz. And therefore, it is kosher Pesach. However, if you buy, even though it's true, but you have to be careful that when you buy quinoa flour, that you should not buy it from a place which also grinds wheat, because then we're afraid that maybe some of the wheat flour got mixed in. It's very hard to clean out a wheat mill because it goes through filters, which are actually sacks, which are very difficult to clean. And so you have to be careful they don't do that also. If they only make quinoa, I would say that you're allowed to use it on, Pesach.
So our recommendation in the book is for the whole grains, to use only the whole grains, and that way you could check them before Pesach for any extraneous matter.
Okay, that's a good idea, especially since the Sfaradim who do eat kidneys, they, like rice, they check it through 3 times, kernel by kernel. They check it through to make sure that there's no grain in it. And like it sounds a little bit strange, if you're going to buy a certain Carolina rice or Riviera rice, these big rice companies, you know, they only deal in rice, so you're going to find wheat kernels in it. Well, the Sfaradim came back to us 1 year, and they said that they found wheat kernels in one of these big companies. And we got back to the company, and they were very concerned, not because they cared about whether Sfaradim Nichshal and eating chametz on Pesach or not. What they were worried about is the people who are allergic to wheat, if they eat the rice, they can sue them. That you claim it's rice and there was wheat in it, and to my understanding, they've taken care of the problem, and their rice is completely rice. Of course, not negev for Ashkenazim, we don't eat rice, but it is very negev for the Sfaradim. And thanks to their minig, it was found out that there was wheat in it and saved them from a possible chiv karas of eating chametz on Pesach.
Okay, we're here with Rabbi Heinemann at the Star K. And if anybody has any questions on any topic on Pesach, please hit 1-1 on your keypad and we'll be able to recognize your question. I want to ask Rabbi Heinemann about a topic that's not to do with quinoa anymore, but pizza stores opening up on Matzoi Pesach. The Stark has a special policy about that. I wanted to know if Rabbi could address that.
Okay, well, the Matzoi Pesach is a very tricky time because really, even though you're allowed to eat chametz on Matzoi Pesach, but what happened before the Stark got involved in many bakeries was that since everyone must eat chametz on Matzah Pesach,
the mitzvah.
It's a mitzvah. It is mamish as if they haven't eaten chametz. They're starving for bread, so they're knocking on the bakery door the minute Yontif is over that they want bread. Well, it takes time to make bread. First, you've got to make a dough. You've got to bake it. It takes time. It doesn't bake in 5 minutes. So the people, they took every leniency that they could find in the book to go and bake the bread as early as possible, like to Pesach. A few minutes after the Shkia, they were ready over there in the bakery trying to make it. And there was a tremendous problem because the chametz is not bought back until the Rav is and the guy are ready to buy back. Well, the Rav is not going to buy back after the Shkia. First he buys it back after Ma'ariv. Once happened to me that the guy would, I told him to come to make sure to be there at 7 o'clock whenever the Yom Tov was over, and he didn't show up. The guy didn't show up. So I called up his home and I said, well, where is he? He says, well, where do you think he is? He's in the bar. Okay. So I called up the bar, found out which bar he was in. I called the bar and said, can I speak to this person? They said, he's dead drunk, and you won't be able to speak to him for at least 2-3 hours until he wakes up. Okay, so that means that the chametz was not brought back, and we're actually stealing the guy's chametz and making bread out of it, or making or whatever we're serving, or pizza, whatever it may be. So it's not. After that, we said that no bakery is allowed to sell any bread until 6:30 in the morning of the day after Pesach. So of course, everyone had tremendous complaints against me for doing that, but I felt confident this was the right thing to do, because not to put this pressure on the bakers to actually be mechal Yom Tov, and you know, the whole Yom Tov, they're under such pressure that it's unbelievable. So of course, 6:30, there are plenty of people banging on the door at the back of the bakery to they want the bread, but by that time they've got plenty of time to prepare it. And the pizza shops also the same thing. Now, we don't let them open up right after Yom Tov. Now, the truth is that we don't even let them sell their pizza before Yom Tov, after Yom Tov. In other words, we tell them like this: you have pizza, you can have in the freezer. Whatever, you should only buy what you think you may be able to sell before Pesach. What's left over, you can sell. But to buy special before Pesach in order to be there after Pesach, you can't do that. And there's a halachic reason why we don't allow that. And that is because if you were buying for after Pesach, you don't really want to sell it. Because when the guy buys it, he doesn't have to give it back, and he can sell it. I mean, he's buying it, and he can keep it. But if you only sell it to him with the understanding that he's going to sell it back to you, so you don't really have any grievance to sell it. So there's a question on the mechira. So we say, whatever's left over, you can sell. Because you're not selling it for after Pesach, and if the guy wants to buy it and keep it, hey, so be it. So, you know, you're happy to sell it. But the so therefore, to be able to get new pizza after Pesach, you got to make it. So it takes time. So you can't do that. You can't make a pizza from scratch in 5 minutes. So it takes time. So we want to give them time. So we don't like them to be open on Pesach. That's the policy.
Okay, we do have a question, and go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a question about, not so much about Shabbos or Pesach, but what the sarkei, or what the halacha is about blios of kalim that have blios of chametz, but are in a commercial application of a yid who did not sell his chametz. In other words, there's a company, they're making products, it's chametz, but it's not certified, and we want to go in and make a run of a certain thing. And we know that last year, Pesach, he didn't sell his kalim or his chametz.
Okay, so this question doesn't only have to do with goyim. With Eden, even by goyim, you have this problem. Because, you know, if a goy goes chazan in his pot, the pot becomes treif. So if a goy takes chametz and he puts it in his pot, it's also, you can't use it. So there's a general question that if someone has chametz, blius in his... can you use them after Pesach, or do you have to kasha them? Okay, so the Mishnah Berurah says as follows. He says that the reason, once it is Eina Ben Yoima, that means it hasn't been 24 hours, the the keli, the tam in the keli, the taste becomes less than tam of gum. It gets bad. And normally we say, even though it's less than tam of gum, you cook a chaz in the pot, you wait 24 hours, you still can't use it for kosher. You've got to kasher it. Because the chazal made a gzera in a ben yama, otu ben yama. If you cook a chaz in the pot and wait 24 hours, you'll be able to use it, which would be mutmen atayrah. Then you would make a mistake and think even if you cook chaz in the pot, within 24 hours you'd be allowed to use it for kosher. So the Chacham made this gzera. But by chametz on Pesach, it's not possible to make this gzera. Because if you're going to be matir when it's Eina Ben Yoma, people won't think, oh, from now on, if chametz was cooked within 24 hours, it'll also be matir because there's no chametz anymore until next Pesach. So therefore we don't make this gzera and therefore it is permitted. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says and that's the minhag in the whole world. That we're not machmir to kasha kelim because of chametz, only for tarfas.
Thank you.
Okay, I want to mention that next month, on Tuesday, April 29th, we'll have Rabbi Meir Kurzfeld, who's a kashrus administrator over here, speaking about food service challenges. Rabbi Kurzfeld is our local administrator for the restaurants and the caterers, and he'll be on Tuesday, April 29th at 9 p.m. Can the Rav address some of the matzah? Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
If maybe I'll say a couple of words about kashering.
Okay, sure.
Kashering for Pesach. There's two ways to kasher for Pesach. One is with haggalah, that means you put it into hot water, and the other one is with libun, that means making it red hot. Now, these two ways of... So, in other words, if you have a knife which is made, which was used for chametz during the year, either you can put it into boiling hot water and it'll get the taste of the chametz out. We say Kabbalah Kapalta, and say well, it went in with heat, it'll come out with heat, with hot liquid. And you could kasher it with libun, you make it red hot, and then whatever the chametz is in will get burnt up. Now, these two ways of kashering work on two completely different principles. The Haggalah works that the is gonna that the chametz will come out of it. We say you cut hot kugels with it, so the heated chametz went in into the knife, the taste of it went into the knife. When you put it into hot water, it'll come out. Now, if you put it into hot water, it comes out, and then the hot water will put it back in again. So what uses it? So either you have 60 times as much water as the knife, in which case when it comes out, it's bottle of shishim, and then when it wants to go back in again, it's mutter. Or if it's an eina ben yoma, it hasn't been used for 24 hours, then when it goes out, it's bottle of roif. And when it wants to go back in again, it is mutter. So that's why, as a practical matter, we always wait till it's 24 hours. And then the issa goes out, becomes bottle, when it goes back in, is mutter. Now, that is completely different than libun. Libun is it gets red hot. And when it gets red hot, the issa doesn't come out. The issa stays in, but gets burnt. It gets burnt in its place. Actually, libun is a much stronger way of getting rid of the chametz than haggalah, because haggalah draws it out, but libun burns it. Libun helps on everything that Haggalah helps, except sometimes it's impractical. Let's say you have a wooden spoon. So Haggalah really will help on a wooden spoon if it doesn't have any cracks in it because it's a kashable material, wood. But you can't make glue on a wooden spoon. There'll be no spoon left. So it's not practical to make glue on. Actually, the minig is that they burn the wooden spoon with the chametz. Why? Because usually you have to use a wooden spoon. Why do you use wooden spoons? Why do they ever use wooden spoons? Why not use a metal spoon? Because a wooden spoon, it doesn't get hot. So if you stir something which is very hot, the part of the spoon that you're holding on to will not get hot. As opposed to a metal spoon, since you have a cloud of chametz, so it's a chametz cooler by metal, when the bottom gets hot, the top also gets hot. So you can't see, it's very difficult to stir. That's why they use wooden spoons. Now, after a while, you use it for a whole year, it gets cracks in it, the wood, and if it gets cracks, you can't kasher with haggalah, because haggalah has to be perfectly clean, and you can't get into it. So therefore, the minhag is to burn it with the chametz. There's nothing else you can do with it. And then you get a new spoon. So a lot of these bidikus chametz sets, they come along with a candle to look for the chametz. They come with a feather to sweep the chametz into your box or wherever you're going to put it into. And they come with a new wooden spoon that you can use for next year. But it's not a chiyu to burn the spoon. It's just a matter of practicality. Today that we have plastic handles that also don't conduct the heat, so the wooden spoons are going out of style. And so you've got a wooden spoon, you don't have to burn it. If you don't have it, you don't have to burn it. The wooden spoon with the Bidikus Chametz set is not to burn, but it's to use for next year. You burn your old spoon, if you have one. Now, there are certain, the chametz went in through heat of a flame only, let's say you use a spit which you put through a chicken or meat and you roast it on the fire, so it goes through only with the heat of the fire, and it's not in a soup or anything like that, then you have to have libun on it. The hagola does not help. So there's certain halachas that have to do with hagola and certain halachas which have to do with libun. Now, there's two types of libun. There's a libun chazak, when it gets red hot, and there's a libun kal, where it just gets hot enough that paper would singe on it if you put it on, which is about 500 degrees. Or paper would burn on it, or the singe on it is sufficient. Now, sometimes where the whole libun is only a chumra, it is not required according to the strict halacha, then libun kal is sufficient. And one of those cases is, as it says in the Mishnah Berurah, if you have a tripod and you use it during the year, you put your pot on it, and the fire's on the ground underneath it, and the tripod picks up the pot so you can put it on the fire. Even so, that, if you want to use it for Pesach, you don't need a libum chazak. A libum kal is sufficient. Why is that? Because really we have a rule that issa balua, that's the issa which is inside the pot, won't go mikli al kli from the pot to the tripod bli roitev, unless there's some liquid in between. But we're afraid that maybe during the year the pot spilled over and so liquid got between the two of them, so we're machmer to make a libun on it. But since it's not the intention that it should spill over, and especially according to those who say you go after Rav Tashmisha, and most of the time it doesn't spill over, it's only a chumrah, and therefore libun kal is enough. Therefore, if you have a stove, let's say a gas stove, and you have these grates which the pots sit on, that's a chatzuva. That's exactly what it is, like a tripod. So you only need libun kal on them. The oven is the grates. You don't usually put chametz directly on the grates. You bake chametz in a pan. So it's again, which chametz may touch it, but it doesn't. It's not most of the time the chametz doesn't touch it. So it's only a chumrah to kasher it. So it has to be clean. Clean it must be. After you've cleaned it, you put it on the libun kal sufficient. So all you got to do is put on the oven to broil and let it stay on broil for about 40 minutes, 40 minutes, two-thirds of an hour, and then the grates will be kosher, the oven will be kosher, but it must be clean, completely clean, before you start.
Rabbi Hyman, what about those people that use the inserts on Pesach? They use a metal insert.
Okay, if they want to use a metal insert, they still have to clean the oven.
But why do they use the insert and not just turn it on?
Well, I'm not sure why they do that, but one thing I can say, that the inserts do not work properly. I mean, for kashas, maybe they're very kosher, but you cannot bake anything in an insert because an oven is engineered that has to be a certain airflow that goes through the oven at all times. Every oven has a chimney where the air comes out on the top, usually in the back, near the back panel, there's a place where the hot air comes out. In the newer ovens, they very often come out under one of the back burners. So you have to be very careful if you're making for during the year. If you're making something, you're cooking fleischiks in the oven, and you have a milking pot standing on the back burner, it's nothing in it. It's cold, but the heat comes up with all the water vapor, the moisture, and it will condense on this pot, on this milking pot, and the water vapor is from a fleischik pot. It's fleischiks,
and it can make the pockets hot from all this heat that's coming out, and it could actually make a trach. So you have to be very careful about that during the year. But as when you have these inserts, they're not engineered exactly so the airflow that's going through them will be in the right place for baking. And therefore, if the cakes fall when they're making these inserts, it's not that the insert is not effective to make a kosher Pesach. It is just that the airflow, and it has to be different for different ovens. It's not as if you could engineer this insert that's going to work for every oven. It's impossible because the airflow in the ovens of different makes is different. So I'm not one of the Hasidim of this. I don't think it's necessary. And you have the main work is cleaning it. You got to clean it anyway. So you might as well kosher putting it on.
We do have a couple of callers. We'll take one now. Go ahead.
Yes, as we're speaking about ovens, can the Rav speak a little bit about Yontif in general, as far as if there's a digital readout on an oven, barring any other issues with the oven, if the person opens the oven, at what point is it considered a gram, and at what point, or is there a time when it's considered a psikresha of his maisa?
It's my thinking that if you have it set up like this, that which the ovens are set up, that it'll read out the temperature of the oven. When you open up the oven, it's getting cool. When you close it, it's going to get hot, and the reading will change. That you're not allowed to do this on Shabbos or even on Yontif. You're not allowed to do this anyway. Grama is asa on Shabbos. On Yontif, it's only Mutter B'Mokum Seder. On Shabbos, it's Mutter B'Mokum Seder. On Yontif, it is Mutter. But whether this is considered Grama or not, since it's always set up to work this way, is very questionable. The B'Aloch has a question in it, Shlomo Zalman has a question about it, and so one should not use them. As a matter of fact, the Star K gives kosher certification to a lot of ovens. And that's one of the things we've done, that when you put it into the Sabbath mode, the digital readout is not there anymore. That's one of the things. The other thing is that when you open up the oven, usually the light goes on. When you close it, the light goes off. When you put if they have a Star Case Sabbath mode, when you put it in the Sabbath mode, if you put it in the Sabbath mode when the oven is open, it'll stay on the whole Shabbos. If you put it in the Sabbath mode when the oven is closed, it'll stay off the whole Shabbos, whether you open it or close it. And the other things which change with the Sabbath mode, like if they have a buzzer on a time bake, that it buzzes when it's over, when the time is up, it'll keep on buzzing and buzzing and buzzing. And on Yontif, it could be very irritable to keep the buzz going all for 2 days Yontif. And this time will be Shabbos, and 2 days Yontif, it's 3 days of buzzing. It can make anyone with sugar. So it goes off. There is no buzzer when you put it in the Sabbath mode. And there are other things also that have to do with the Sabbath mode, that there's a 12-hour automatic shut-off on a lot of these ovens, on most of them. And if you want to use it on Shabbos or Yontif, you don't want this shut-off. It goes to 3 days. It'll only shut off after 3 days when you put it in the Sabbath mode.
Okay, thank you, caller. We have another question.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello. Shalom. Can I ask the Rav two questions? Firstly, if the Rav doesn't mind discussing warming drawers, if they can be kosher, and if the warming drawer goes up into the oven itself, does that create a problem? And secondly, as far as mechiras chametz, if a person owns stock in a company that owns food companies and things of that sort.
Okay, let me discuss the second question first. You want to know about if you have stock in a company that has chametz. Now, the truth is most companies have chametz. General Motors, they have a cafeteria, and they own chametz. And certainly if you want a Miller's beer company, it's all chametz. But Rav Moshe Feinstein already has in his tshuva that you're allowed to have these stocks on Pesach. If you're not allowed to sell, you cannot sell the stock by just putting it into a closet and selling everything in the closet to a guy, because you cannot sell a stock with a Shah Mechira. The only way you can sell a stock is only in the stock exchange. So that's the only way to sell it. So if you'd have to sell it, you'd really have to sell it. But Rav Moshe Feinstein says that the only way you're, even though technically you're considered an owner, and legally you're considered an owner when you have a stock in a company, but if you have, let's say, you buy three stocks in the American Telephone and Telegraph Company, AT&T, when you drive past the company, do you say, ah, what a beautiful company I have? No, you don't think of it as your own, because it's an investment. You just sort of hope to get more money back than you put in. And you don't consider yourself an owner, and they don't consider you an owner. If you walk into the front door, they're not going to roll out the red carpet for you. But now if you had, let's say, 2% of AT&T, which is a tremendous amount of money, millions of dollars, so then maybe if you have all that money invested, or 10% of the Pepsi-Cola company, you would consider yourself an owner. When you drive past, you would say, look, what a beautiful company I have. And they would also roll out the red carpet for you if they knew that you had 10% of Pepsi-Cola. So then you actually would have to sell it. That's what Moshe Paskins, and that's the minig in the whole world, that you're not backbid on stocks under normal conditions. You don't normally have that much in a company to consider it that you own the chametz.
You'd have to sell it because you own the chametz they have in their boardroom, or because they only if they make chametz.
Either way, you don't consider yourself an owner, and you're not kind of the chametz. You only all kinyanim need gemiras das. You have to have a determination of mind that you want to own it. So no one has a determination of mind. He wants to own the company when he buys the stock in the company.
Right, but if I own 10% of Pepsi Cola, I have to sell it because I mean, Pepsi Cola is not chametz itself. So I would have to sell it because they have chametz in their lunchroom.
They own chametz.
Because they have chametz in their lunchroom.
Well, not because they own chametz, not because the workers bring in. They're not kind of.
No, because they own that.
They own chametz. Now, like a couple, most of these big companies, even Pepsi Cola, they have usually other businesses. No one puts all the money in one basket. And since they probably have other businesses which easily could own chametz, as I say, they can have a cafeteria, they can have whatever else, and therefore it is, if you are a substantial owner of it, you would have to sell it over the stock market. In the stock exchange, that's the only way that you really can sell it, you'd have to sell it. Okay, now what was the other question? What was your first question?
Warming drawers.
Warming drawers, okay. Now, warming drawers, according to the strict halacha, they usually get to more than the shear of yad sled as well. That means your hand, you can't keep your hand on it, which is 120, but even more than that. And therefore, from a halacha standpoint, they're considered like a regular oven. Now, you can't just kosher it by you can't kosher it with the concept of Kabbalah Kach Palto, that the same way the heat goes in, with the same heat that goes in, it's going to come out. But that only works if it would be with a liquid. So then you can say if it went in at 150 degrees, it'll come out at 150 degrees. But over here, by turning it on, there's just heat in there. There's no water in there. And with the heat, with libun, you don't say Kabbalah Kach Palto because nothing comes out, as I explained before. It gets burnt up. So if it gets burnt up, it has to be hot enough to burn up. And as long as it's not that hot, that will actually burn, which is the shear of kashness of all mibuchutz, which I said is about 500 degrees, nothing's going to burn. It will get hot, but it won't burn. And so therefore you cannot kosher it just by turning it on, like you can on a, like electric stove. It actually, the coils, when you turn it on high, they actually get red hot, and even if it doesn't look like it's red hot to you, you put it on in the dark, you will see that there is a red shine in the coil that goes around. There's metal over it. There's actually red inside. You can actually see it glow through it. Certainly, most of the time, you actually see it gets red, and then it's considered a lit one.
But if you don't kosher the warming drawer, does that affect the rest of the oven?
If you don't kosher the warming drawer, it will not also the rest of the oven.
You have to clean it, though, right?
You have to clean it, but you don't have to kosher it.
Okay.
In general... Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry? No, I was going to ask... I wanted to go back to the other question when the oven's finished. I mean, as far as office, meaning shared office space. So I've mentioned if a person has a partner... is a partner is a partner in a firm or in a business, and there are some Jews, some non-Jews. So does that have the same? How does one sell that? You know, in regards to what the Rav said about the Pepsi Cola, the 10%. How would that affect, a partnership of one Jew and several Jews and several non-Jews?
Okay, so someone's a partner in a law firm. So the fact that they don't usually own chametz. People bring in chametz into the place. As long as you have no responsibility for the chametz, in other words, if something would happen to it, they can't go and sue you that you didn't take care of their chametz. So they keep chametz there. That's not your responsibility. But but if you do have achrayas for it, so then you have to make sure that there's no chametz there. You have to make sure there's no chametz on Pesach. The ones who really have a problem are the people who own nursing homes, where they're goyim in these nursing homes, and they don't want to eat matzah on Pesach. They want to eat chametz. And even though you've sold the nursing home to a goy for Pesach, but if someone gets sick from the chametz, who are they going to sue? To the goy who you sold it to? He doesn't have a license to operate a nursing home. You're the one who has a license. They're going to sue you. If they're going to sue you, then you have the right for it. And there's a very big child over here. What are you supposed to do? How do you get yourself out of chametz of a guy that you sold it to a guy, right? This whole place. So it's chametz of a guy with a yidis makabla chrayas for it. He has the chrayas. What does he do?
And what's the answer?
Okay, I asked Ramosha Feinstein this question, and he said, he showed me a tosfos that he says, "Rishas Chachak, you could be samachan." It's not simple what you should do in such a case. It's not everyone is the same. It depends a little bit on the law in the state, and they should ask Rishas.
Okay, thank you for that question. We have another question here. Go ahead.
Yes, if people weren't careful and they got chametz on rugs, is it mutter to use on Shabbos the manual rug sweeper? And then another question is, do you have to kosher your dentures?
Okay, in general, you're not allowed to use a manual rug sweeper on Shabbos. The Bialocha says, there should not be a problem with using a rug sweeper. Because there are two. What's the problem with a rug sweeper? The problem is that you are cleaning the rug. And in the same way, if dust gets on your hat or on your clothing, you're not supposed to brush it off on Shabbos because it's considered cleaning it, libun. So the similar thing will be with a rug. If it gets dirty, you can't sweep it up. However, there are two types of dirt in a rug. There's dirt in a rug which is on top of the rug, and there's dirt in a rug which is embedded in the rug. So the one on top is not really considered attached to the rug. Let's say someone ate popcorn, and you have pieces of popcorn on top of the rug. They're not embedded in the rug. It's not considered libun. In the same way that if you have a plastic tablecloth and you're allowed to clean it off on Shabbos because it doesn't get embedded in the plastic, it's like washing dishes. Nothing gets embedded in the dish. It's just stuck onto the top of the dish. It's not considered cleaning it. So the same thing is with the dirt on top is not considered libun. The only problem is that there's some dirt which actually is in the rug. So if you take off all the dirt on top of the rug, the dirt which is in the rug, if you're not makpid on it, that's halacha. What do you mean clean it? How clean does it have to be? How dirty does it have to be that's considered dirt? So the shir is that it's, as it says in some machine bays in Archaim, that if you makpid on the dirt, I mean, you don't want it to be dirty, so you wouldn't want to be seen with this dirt on your clothes, so then it's considered you're cleaning it. If you don't care about it, it's not the derech to care about it, then it's not considered cleaning, it's not considered dirty. So the dirt which is embedded in the rug, most of the time you don't really care about it. It's not that it's unsightly, it's just that you want to, people want to be clean. It's not good if you have sort of crumbs in the rug. It'll cause ants to come and other things like that. So you want to be clean. Hygiene is very important. But it's not considered makbid as far as that's considered dirty is concerned. People walk on the rug with their shoes, and no one's worried about that maybe there's some dirt on the bottom of the shoes in most places. So so you should be able to clean it. However, the Mishnah, the Bialacha says that the minig is not to use a brush, even a brush bachlal, even though that there is no dafo, you really can't use a carpet sweeper. So the din of chametz, you only over by Rabbi Matzah if you have a kazayas of chametz. And the Shagas Aryeh says, and it's muskim in the poskim, that even though normally we say chatzi shir is asa min ha-Torah, that even a small amount is asa, but you don't say that by Rabbi Matzah. What the reason that he says not shai chazes to rufi? Well, it doesn't make any difference what the reason is. Actually, it's a mishnah. Botek shibas tzidke areva. If you have dough which is in the cracks of a bowl, in the yeshbay kazayas, you're not. So the poskim say that if there is in the house, there's a chasizayas here and a chasizayas there, if you could, maybe you will sweep them together and it'll come to be a kazayas, so then you have to get rid of it. But if things which are in a carpet, they don't sweep easily together. And so therefore we don't have that problem. So you don't have to worry about crumbs. You should not use a carpet sweeper. The minhag is not to use a carpet sweeper. If you can, so just leave it there. There's no problem. But make sure, the best thing will be to make sure it doesn't happen. That to begin with, eat the rolls or the bagels over a tissue, and whatever crumbs would fall into the tissue, you throw in the toilet. Some people eat them out on the porch. I favor more doing it in the place where you eat your regular meal. So the meal should be tofel to the bread. You don't make a bracha on it. And just make sure that any crumbs go into the tissue and throw away the tissue.
Caller has another question. What was it?
Dentures. Kashering dentures.
Kashering dentures.
Okay. You don't know about kashering dentures. Actually, your question about kashering dentures doesn't only apply to dentures. It also applies to people who have fillings in their teeth, that they could become chametzik if you eat hot chametz, and or davar charif, and we have the same question. Now, it's very difficult for a person to cut. Maybe dentures, you can put them in hot water. Maybe, I don't know if they get ruined if you put them in hot water, but certainly you can't put your fillings into, you can't catch the fillings. The minig is that we assume that whatever a person would eat is not hot enough, Yatz letters boat, to make any blia of chametz. Even though, you know, they sell these containers where you put your glass of tea in, that have like metal or plastic, it's like a skeleton of a container. You put it in order, because you can't hold the glass, it's too hot, but you can drink the tea. So you see that you can, even though you can't hold it, you can drink it. It is Yatz letters boat. You can drink it, but it's true, you can drink it, but usually when you drink it, you sip it, and slowly, and it first goes on your tongue. By the time it gets to your teeth, it is not Yatz letters boat anymore. We assume that whatever chametz a person has in his mouth, by the time it gets to his dentures or to his fillings, is not Yatz letters boat. And by davar charif, we assume that by the time you get to your dentures, it's not charif anymore. It's mixed with saliva and whatever other things. And it is not belayah. So even though the person should brush his teeth and clean the dentures, that's very important, especially a person should brush his teeth. I mean, the actual normal, the natural teeth, if they're bilayer, it doesn't matter because it becomes, like some service says, it becomes, it's this hapach, the boss of a dumb, it becomes part of the bone. And it's not considered a chamasik anymore. But that doesn't help with fillings, doesn't help with dentures. But we assume that it's not yas ledesbo, and therefore no one's machmir to kasha their fillings. And they just, some people put the dentures in hot water. Maybe it helps, maybe it makes it worse. I'm not exactly sure. But
why would it make it worse if it's mavliya?
Yeah, maybe now it makes a benyama. Before it was any benyama. You know, I don't know about. I don't know. Maybe it makes it worse out. It's not necessary, but they must be clean. That's important.
Okay, thank you, Rav Heinemann, for coming out and taking the time to speak to us. Again, this is a monthly teleconference. The next time we'll be together is Tuesday, April 29th at 9 p.m. Rabbi Meir Kurzfeld speaking about food service challenges. This teleconference was recorded, and you can find it on star-k.org. We hope to continue this on a monthly basis, and if you want to be apprised of future classes, please send an email to telekosher@star-k.org. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a chakosher v'samech. Kol tov.